Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
You know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host, Lars Larson.
Who's responsible? You've been there 12 years. Are you responsible, Bob? Answer the question, please. Are you responsible? If you're not responsible, who is? Who do we look to for leadership if no one takes responsibility?
That is Dave Reichert, and I think he's likely to be the next governor of the state of Washington. And he's debating a guy named Bob Ferguson, currently the attorney general and a thoroughly political state official. And by that, I mean he sides with the Democrats, he sides with their policies, he sides with all that. And about that time, when Dave Reichert was demanding, you've been there. While the crime rate has gone up, while the murder rate has gone up, while the rape rate has gone up, you've been there. Are you responsible? Bob Ferguson looked like he was trying to crawl under the podium. He looked as small as possible, scribbling on a piece of paper furiously, as though there's some notes I have to take right now. I don't want to look up. I don't want to actually acknowledge the question that's being put to me. That's how part of the debate went last night. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show on a Thursday. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And we just got word before I went on the air today. There is now a Homeland Security official who is saying, obviously off the record, that at the time of the second assassination attempt, Homeland Security is aware that there are five assassination teams in America right now targeting Donald Trump. Three of them were put together by foreign governments. Two of them are apparently homegrown. And we'll get you more details on that as they become available, but we'll do that in a moment. I want to talk about last night's debate, but I also want you in the conversation. We call this the best conversation in talk journalism. And if you want to join, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, you disagree with me, I'm happy to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our X poll, here's today's question. Governor Gavin Newsom of California signed two new laws, both of them almost certainly unconstitutional. And what they do is they ban what are called deep fakes. In other words, faked audio, faked video made with the help of artificial intelligence, that if you use those as disinformation during elections, then you can be prosecuted. And in fact, he said just a few minutes ago, he wouldn't even hold back on possibly bringing charges or legal action against Elon Musk of SpaceX and also of Starlink. So is California right to ban free speech when it comes in the form of artificial intelligence and deep fakes during elections? I would say no to that question. You can answer any way you like. It's brought to you today by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. But let me get back to last night's gubernatorial debate. Very interesting to note that in the last gubernatorial debate, which was the first of the campaign season, this last night was number two. In the first one, Bob Ferguson would not shut up about Donald Trump. But in this one, Donald Trump's name didn't come up at all. And it may be that the worm has turned, because maybe Bob Ferguson realizes that just bashing Trump is not going to get him anywhere, especially because the latest estimates say, and this is Nate Silver, the former pollster for the New York Times, says that if the election were held today, Donald Trump would beat Kamala Harris by 50 electoral college votes. And of course, the electoral college is the significant vote. The American popular vote matters, but it is not decisive. What decides it is the electoral vote. And that's because the founders of this country believed that they didn't want to just let the biggest population centers, even back then when there were only 13 colonies, they said if we let this be decided by population, it'll be Pennsylvania and New York picking our president every single time. Well, today, if we didn't have the Electoral College, it would be New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, maybe Miami, Dallas, and San Francisco. They would pick the president, and the rest of us would just have to put up with it. So consider that. It may be that Bob Ferguson has decided bashing on a successful man who's running for president and is the odds-on favorite to win in November is not going to do him any good. So let me go to this. This was the question that Dave Reichert, former sheriff of King County, was asking of Bob Ferguson, and I think it's a very reasonable one. It was about crime.
And during your 12 years as the state's chief law enforcer, crime has skyrocketed, murders have more than doubled, the drug crisis has gotten deadlier. After you urged lawmakers to decriminalize fentanyl, if you're not responsible for any of this, Bob, who is?
Public safety. Thanks for bringing that up. Both Republican prosecutors who endorsed my opponent and Democratic prosecutors who endorsed me, they sent their toughest cases to me and my team.
Yeah, but that doesn't answer the question now, does it? Because all he's saying is when somebody has a tough case in one of the counties around Washington, they hand it to the attorney general. Then he takes care of it. But what about the gigantic increase in violent crime, in murders, in drug deaths, and everything else? Bob Ferguson had no answer for that. So he went to one of the few safe refuges that Democrats have, and that is to go back to abortion, which is one of those issues that's already been decided by the United States Supreme Court, decided by the lawmakers in Washington State. Because whether we like it or not, and I don't like it, the lawmakers in Olympia, dominated by Democrats, have said in Washington State, abortion is allowed up to the moment of birth and even beyond birth. And we can talk about that as well. Trump was right during the debate last week that that's their decision. And the Supreme Court says it is the decision of the states. I don't have to agree with the decision they made to say it's their decision. But Bob Ferguson has no other place to go. So take a listen to this.
Reichert responded by noting state law protected abortions. And now they quote your response. But what we have to do now is work towards unraveling all that. Can you explain to the women of Washington State why you want to unravel reproductive freedom in our state?
Once again, taken out of context, that was a multi-question. There were three or four questions that I was asked that night, and the unraveling comment was directed toward transgenders participating in women's sports. It was also referencing the use of men in women's bathrooms. That's what the unraveling comment, Bob, was all about.
So he had almost no place to go. And also the issue of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion came up. And Bob Ferguson challenged Reichert. And I thought Reichert had a great answer. Take a listen.
So, no, I don't agree with DEI, but I do agree with treating people with respect and hiring the best people. That's what I did when I was the sheriff. I had an all-female staff, chiefs and majors, and the commander of my internal investigation unit. Why? Not because of their color, not because of their sex, but because they were the most qualified people.
And Bob Ferguson has no answer that he can talk DEI all he wants, but hiring people because of their race and gender is immoral, illegal, unconstitutional, and hiring them based on skills and abilities, that's what America is all about, and Bob Ferguson is not that.
Some solid advice from Senator John Kennedy.
Look, if you hate cops just because of the cops, the next time you get in trouble, call a crackhead.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know he got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Of all the candidates running for mayor, Rene Gonzalez seems the most logical and sensible choice. So Rose City voters, yeah, they probably won't choose him because of that. Gonzalez vows to make Portlandia the safest city in America. Now, that would be a change. Failed leadership for the last decade has made Portland America's poster child for Riot City. Politicians in other towns literally put up billboards, and this is all over America, urging, don't let our city become Portland. Networks feature the video from Portland as an example. This is what happens when you let Antifa and BLM run wild. Some of the worst homeless numbers in the country, high drug deaths, and vacant office buildings. It's bad. Gonzalez promises to hire 25% more cops and set it right. His closest competitor, Carmen Rubio, presents a contrast, if you want to put it that way. She's worked in taxpayer-funded jobs for decades, and she's been a traffic scofflaw for most of the last 20 years. Rubio has racked up 150 tickets, six license suspensions, and apparently doesn't even pay her bills while she's making $100,000 a year. Apparently, the law doesn't mean much to Carmen Rubio. A week ago, after the ticket story broke, she banged into a Tesla while parking, doing thousands of dollars of damage to the car, and then just walked away. Didn't leave her number, but Carmen got caught on camera. And now she's playing the victim, claiming that she's being exploited. Does anybody trust Carmen Rubio to oversee 7,000 employees and an $8 billion city budget? Glad to get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, will the new WNBA team for Portland fail as the last one did? I mean, they're kind of a big money loser, maybe a tax write-off, but that's about it. But Jim Arter wrote in, Lars, I know you're not a sports type guy, but all this talk about the new WNBA team in Portland, in my opinion, is a waste of time. The city had a team back in 2000. It only survived 2 years because nobody went, signed Jim Arter. Well, I think that's probably true, but I still like the idea of a name for the team. The Rose City Riot. Now, wouldn't that fit Portland to a T? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Today's Daily Grill is awarded to the cowards in the leadership of the Teamsters Union, a very powerful union, a very large union. Its political endorsement means something. Its dollars from its members means more. Except the Teamsters ran into a buzzsaw this week. They were planning to announce their endorsement yesterday. And if you expected, well, they're going to endorse Kamala Harris. Yeah, you would expect that they would endorse her because the Teamsters Union has endorsed the Democratic candidate only, going all the way back to Bill Clinton in the 1990s. So, did they endorse Kamala? No, because they took a poll of their own membership, and their membership, 60% of them said, we support Donald Trump. Only 34% said, we support Kamala Harris. So the union was stuck. Would they do an endorsement in which they endorse a candidate only supported by one-third of their members and opposed by two-thirds? Well, they got a problem. And I think the union members have a problem, too. They need to know the workers and members of a union are the union, not the fat cats getting the big salaries at the top. You need to stand up, grow a backbone, and tell your union leadership, endorse Donald Trump and give him our political donations. Our best email so far today, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Tracy sends it in. Lars, can you please let the people of Washington State know that this carbon tax on gas has taken $2 billion ripped off from the people of Washington State? I'm glad to tell you that. I would urge you to vote for the ballot initiative that will wipe out Jay Inslee's carbon tax. He took almost $1 billion of that money to invest in a company that he's going to be working for. He's ripped off the taxpayers of this state. I don't know if that allegation about Inslee is true or not, but it's worth checking on. He should be in jail. Bob Ferguson is worse. People need to know this. These people are breaking the law all over the place. It is outrageous. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. On the Radio Northwest Network, Jim's on the phone from Bellingham. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
The impending catastrophe of global warming. I'm rather certain you'll disagree with me. That's okay. This year has been recorded now as the hottest on record. I know we've had cooler than average temperatures up here for the last month or so, but we also went through a period when they set a record for the most days over 80 degrees, like 50 in a row. And that's still not enough to challenge the fact that every year now is becoming the most hottest on record. You know,
except, Jim, you're talking about weather, because weather is what happens locally, and weather does change from year to year. If you look at the overall numbers for the whole planet, we're not seeing the global warming that they had forecast. So, and in fact, it's so bad that the global warming, the people who are pushing global warming, dropped using the term global warming. They now call it climate change. And the reason they do is because for decades, they predicted we're going to have impossible warming by about the year 2000. And then when it didn't happen, they said, well, we can't call it global warming anymore. I know, we'll call it climate change. That way, whether it's hot or cold, warm or wet or dry, we can say the climate is changing. And the problem is, Jim, this planet has seen changes in climate before. And if you do your research, go back and take a look at the medieval warming period, which affected a big part of the Earth's surface. We didn't have measurements everywhere back then. For literally a couple of hundred years, it got warmer. And then after that, for a period of time, it got colder, demonstrably colder. And if you say, well, that's global warming. Well, there weren't any SUVs. There was no Al Gore back then. So if you believe, though, and I'll go along with your theory, let's say that global warming is a problem. What's causing it?
Too many carbon emissions in the atmosphere and methane.
And why do you think that CO2 is the driver of temperature? Why do you think that CO2 drives temperature?
Because it acts as a blanket. They call it the greenhouse effect.
That's what they call it. The problem is water vapor.
The sun comes through and the heat cannot.
Obviously, you drank the Kool-Aid, Jim. I can't persuade you otherwise. Listening to Chuck Weiss, who's a meteorologist. He knows the physics of the problem. I'm not a meteorologist, and I'm guessing you aren't either. So if you look at that and say there were people who said in the 1980s, that we would be in impossible global warming by the year 2000. We're now in 2024, in case you want to check your calendar and find out. We're now past the point where they said that impossible global warming would begin to ruin the Earth, and it has not done so. If they can't forecast the weather out
more.
No, go ahead. Say it.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes.
Robert Hunziker, H-U-N-Z-I-K-E-R. You can look him up on the internet.
Okay, that's not helping my audience to just tell him a name. You have to tell us what he was going to say. But, Jim, interesting try at being a naysayer. Better luck next time. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. The upcoming American elections promise some provocative politics, but be forewarned, the green agenda may lead to some extreme rhetoric.
Die, gas pupper!
So prepare yourself by listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails. You know, I think that mortgage rates are a great measure of where we stand in terms of money and where we stand in the economy. When Joe Biden became the president of the United States, oh my goodness, 3.5 years ago, mortgage rates were about 2.65%. I've got that number knitted into my forehead because I want to make sure that I remember it. 2.65%. Today, you know, about double that. So, I mean, who's counting? But it's put a real hitch in people's get-along. In fact, a recent poll said that about 6% of Americans today would consider buying a house when the mortgage rates are 6% or above. About 6% of Americans. That means 94% of Americans, whether it's psychology or actually the finances, that they think, I can't buy a house under these conditions. So, when I saw this week that the Federal Reserve had decided to slash its key rate by 0.5 percentage point, 50 basis points if you want to talk technically. I thought, well, this could be good news. So I thought we'd check with our friend Nick Shivers, one of the many great supporters of this program and his real estate business, the Nick Shivers team. Nick, welcome back.
Lars, always a pleasure to be here.
Does this herald some kind of good news that mortgage rates are going to come down to where average folks can actually buy a house again and maybe sell their old house?
Well, Lars, in the long term, I think yes, because I think we are now on a less restrictive platform that the Fed's going. But, I mean, the reality is interest rates since the Fed announcement have went up about 7 basis points, which went from 6.11, and today I think we're at 6.17% with a 30-year mortgage.
But why did they go up? Did they go up because people are thinking this is not good news for the economy, or what?
No, I think there was some other data. If you can believe the U.S. Department of Labor just came out with jobless claims, they came in about 11,000 less than expected. And as we know, the revised claims keep popping out, the biggest in history. But also some other data points, housing starts and building permits both exceeded expectations. Because remember, mortgage rates are not just affected by the Fed fund rate, but it's the 10-year bond, policy, inflation, economy. And there was some good news in the market with the economy on certain aspects like jobless claims and housing starts.
Okay, so that means that there are more people out there, companies and individuals, who are building houses. That's good news because you have to add some supply. But is there enough of an addition to actually start to moderate prices? Or are they just responding to the fact that prices, houses are now selling for record prices, even with high interest rates? So let's build some houses and sell them.
Yeah. Historically, Lars, we are still at one of the highest unaffordable rates in history. And again, Lars, that's because in a lot of areas, especially the West Coast, is restrictive policies on building. And when you have that coupled with outrageous costs associated with the bureaucracy of a lot of these cities, you can't build affordable housing. And they like to talk about, we need to get affordable housing. But the reality, Lars, you have to put incentives for builders to build affordable housing, because the difference between the public and the government is public sector has to make money. The government just spends taxpayers' money and they lose money, right? And it just doesn't work in the private business world.
You know, I think if people like politicians, and I think Kamala Harris in particular, were held to the same rules that, say, the Federal Trade Commission holds private companies, they'd say, look, you're being deceptive in the way you talk about this. She's now running around saying, I'm going to bring down the cost of childcare. And if you wonder, well, how's she going to do that? And she basically says, the government's going to write you a check. Well, that doesn't bring the price down. It would be like you saying, hey, mom and dad, I can't really afford to buy a car. And mom and dad say, well, we'll write you a check. And you say, oh, wow, the price of the car didn't come down, but all of a sudden I can buy one because mom and dad wrote me a big check, and now I can go out and buy the car I wanted to buy. But it hasn't changed the price of the car, not one little bit. In fact, usually government subsidies have a way of driving the price of everything up, not down.
Lars, I was looking at Housing Wire. They had a stat that for adult 30-year-olds, comparing 1983 compared to 2023. In 1983, because we're talking about, you know, because their policy now is to give away everything for free. Free college loans, free this, free that. But let's look what it actually is doing. In 1983, 83% of all 30-year-olds lived on their own. Right now, it's 62. Wow. Own a home. Back in 1983, 48% of all 30-year-olds owned a home. Right now, it's 31%. So the policy of giving away stuff for free has consequences.
And the end consequence may be, what happens when you make it the norm to never own a house, to never even aspire to it? Because if it's been put out of your reach long enough, does it become something where, you know, if somebody's come through their late teens, early 20s, and you've never been able to even think about buying a house, it'd be like saying, why don't you go buy a Ferrari? You say, I can't buy a Ferrari. I don't even have to know what the price is. I can't buy a Ferrari. Okay, if you know that long enough, at what point does it become a long-term expectation of that 30 and now 40-year-old who says, yeah, I've never been able to buy a house, so I don't even think about it anymore?
Yeah, there is a mindset that I think people, because remember, a lot of the time, our mind is the economy, whether the economy is good or bad, our own, what we believe is possible. I mean, the reality is home ownership has been forced savings that allows people to create wealth. And that, as we know, inflation, restrictive policies, giving away everything for free, crushes the middle class in the long term.
So what do we do about it? And how much is it going to have to come down? Again, how much would the Fed have to drop rates to be able to make it realistic again? Where I cited that poll where they'd gone out and asked people, can you afford to buy a house right now with rates right around 6? And they got 6 or 7% of people saying, I can afford to buy at that price. And the other 94% said, no, can't afford it. How much is it going to have to come down?
Well, Lars, that's a slippery slope. If we don't get easing of restrictions for building, if we just lower rates and don't increase the supply of homes, guess what happens? Then we have a supply and demand issue, and then prices continue to rise. We have to get additional housing out there. We talked about it. Austin, Texas, they've seen in the last 2 years an 18% drop in home values. It's because they had more building than L.A. and Chicago combined.
Now, that's a great example where all you've got to do is say to the politicians, wherever you happen to be, hey, why don't we do it like they're doing it? And government, which wants every dime you've got in your pocket and the next $10 you make on top of that, is going to say, well, if we did that, why, government wouldn't get as much money, but people would get housing. So if the politicians really meant what they said, that they want housing to be built for people, then the government needs to get out of the way. There's a good example they can follow if they choose to do it. And if they choose not to do it, I think it's because of the greed of government. That is Nick Shivers, one of the many great supporters of this program. His business is called the Nick Shivers Team, nickshivers.com. Glad to have you with me, Nick, and glad to get your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, should Northwest schools keep expensive, unneeded, empty buildings open to appease the neighborhood and the parents, or save the money and actually educate the kids? Seattle is right up against that right now, and I'll talk about it next.
Constantine Kissin on Hamas.
For years now, many of us have been warning that the barbarians are at the gates. We were wrong. They're inside. There are positives as well. I mean, say what you want about Hamas supporters. At least they know what a woman is.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network, serving the states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho for the past quarter century. Our ex-poll today is California right to ban free speech in the form of artificial intelligence deepfakes in elections. I would say no. They're not right to ban free speech, and I'm pretty sure that the bills, the laws, that were just signed into effect this week by Governor Gavin Newsom of California will quickly be found to be unconstitutional in the courts. But my answer for now is no, they're not right to do that at all, even though the fear of deep fakes, we can talk about that, but it essentially takes anything that is parody, and unless it has a big sign on it saying this is a parody in case you're too dumb to figure it out, it makes it something that could be prosecuted if you put it up. Today's, and apparently some of this is driven by the fact that Gavin Newsom himself has been the subject of disparaging memes, and he doesn't like it. So as governor, he gets to get even for it. The X-Bowl is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. To your calls now, let's start with David. David, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my calls, Laura. I enjoy your show every day.
Thank you, sir.
I just had a question. It's about presidential succession. If, heaven forbid, Joe Biden did pass away today and Kamala Harris was sworn into office, I have two questions about this.
Sure.
One, how would it affect the election being so close? And two, would it be considered her first term in office?
It would be considered her first term, partial term in office. Would it affect her being able to run potentially and win and then win a second term? It would not. And here's why. Early on when Joe Biden was elected, some of us said, well, Joe's going to wait till it's been exactly one half of the term plus a day or two, and then he will bow out and Kamala Harris will become president for a partial term that is within days of being 2 years. Even then, she could run for two more terms. So if she served from now until January as president, could she run two more times? She could. Now, would she win even once? I think the answer to that is pretty easy. But the only time it would affect your term, say Joe Biden had cashed it in one way or the other in his first year in office, and the job got handed over to Kamala Harris either because he stepped down or because he expired. If she served 3 years, she would then get the opportunity to run one more term and no more. So somebody could serve theoretically for almost 10 years. Two full terms, that's 8, plus almost 2 years, that's 10, or close to 10. If she had been in office, if she had taken over the first year of Joe Biden's term in office and had succeeded to the presidency, she could only run for one more term, and that's the bottom line. Let's go to Neri in Seattle. Hey, Neri, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, probably a different question. What is the function and why do we need the UN?
The function of the UN is to screw up the world as much as possible and represent the thugs and dictators who are the majority members of the UN. And why do we need it? We don't need it. If it were up to me, I'd cut off their funding this afternoon. I think the UN is a terribly corrupt organization. I think the UN facilitates a lot of evil on the planet. And I want to back that up. Here's why. The UN has an agency that is dedicated to refugees everywhere on the planet. Okay? That's their refugee agency. You say, okay, those are the people who help the Palestinians. You say, no, the Palestinians were given their own separate agency called UNRWA. So in other words, even though the Palestinians claim to be refugees, they're not, but they claim to be, they got their own agency. And the UN put about 30,000 members of Hamas on the payroll. It's a lot easier to run a terrorist organization if you can get the United States to give the money to the UN and then the UN to give the money to Hamas to be able to give a paycheck to 30,000 of your members. And that's exactly what they did. The UN is largely worthless, and it is also a threat to American sovereignty. I'd get rid of them tomorrow, and I'd ship them all home from Turtle Bay. Let's go to Mark. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just got a quick question and want your opinion. So as far as, like, the climate change, which, you know, I don't really agree with all the mess that's going on with that. But I was just wondering, like, the environmentalists and everybody are trying to get, more solar panels and all that other stuff.
Yep.
And
you got to get to it, though, Mark. We're burning daylight real fast.
Okay, the solar panels are black. Well, doesn't the blackness, you know, create more heat than the amount that they're, you know, trying to get out of the, you know, with the mining of the minerals and everything? And
I'm not sure if you're saying that by putting solar panels out there, it absorbs more of the sun's energy and turns it into infrared. You're right. But it isn't enough. I mean, if you had miles of solar panels, it wouldn't make a marked difference. Frankly, every time we plant a forest, the The forest is dark colored, and it absorbs more heat as or creates more IR as well.
What do you think about roads and stuff like that?
They all do that as well. In fact, there's a phenomenon known as the urban heat island, that if you have a place that 150 years ago there was no city, and now there is a city with rooftops and sidewalks and roads and everything else, it is warmer today because of that urban heat island effect than it would be otherwise.
The Lars Larson.
Would have been sold in exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
You know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars
and Nas.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to Conspiracy Theory Thursday on the Radio Northwest Network. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. But I want to ask a state senator, Senator Mike Patton, who joins me now from the Spokane Valley, ranking member of the Washington State Senate Law and Justice Committee. Senator, welcome back.
Always good to be with you, Lars.
I want to ask you about this garbage that is being shoveled out, and nobody shovels garbage out like lawyers, and I think public defense attorneys are the worst. But they are running a scam, as far as I'm concerned. I want to know if you agree with me or not, but here's what we have. Everybody who's accused of a crime in the United States under the Constitution has a right to have a lawyer provided for them if they can't afford it. We've had an indigent defense or public defense system for decades in both Oregon and Washington. In this case, we're talking about Washington State, and it has handled the caseload. Now, that was true going up to the pandemic. Since the pandemic, we have far fewer police, largely because of the depolicing done at the urging of the mobs in the streets after the death of George Floyd. You have fewer cops who are arresting fewer people and referring fewer people to prosecutors who prosecute far fewer people. And all of a sudden, the defense bar, the public defense bar says, hey, we're short of resources and really overworked. Now, Senator, help me understand that. They were doing the job before the pandemic. The pandemic happened. The police numbers went down. Prosecutions went down, in some cases, down dramatically in cities all over America, including the Northwest. How is it that all of a sudden they're stressed to the gills with this impossible workload and demanding more money?
Well, there's fewer of them, Lars. There's fewer law school students that are going in to be public defenders or prosecutors. The prosecutors are also short in Spokane County. Prosecutor Haskell tells me has 9 open positions. So there's fewer in. They have large debt out of law school, and naturally they're going to go where the market takes them, where the higher paying jobs. So that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is these standards are being promulgated by the Bar Association. And the Supreme Court is having a couple of hearings, one next week, September 25th, the second one November 13th, to get public input. So they've not adopted these new standards, but these new standards are extreme in my view. They would reduce the caseload by 70% for felonies and 60% for misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors. And there aren't enough public defenders right now to handle cases in certain parts of our state. They just had those protesters, you know, that were on I-5 stopping traffic because they were protesting what was going on in Gaza, and they were charged by the city of SeaTac. All the cases were dismissed because there weren't a public defender available.
Well, so but hold on. Senator, I'm not understanding something then. If they are short of lawyers, then they're not short of money. Because obviously if they have empty positions that are funded empty positions, then if they're not paying the paychecks, they're just short of personnel and they need to hire more people.
But I mean, they are, the pay is less than what somebody can get working in private practice coming out of law school. So that's part of it's the pay. Part of it is, for both prosecutors and public defenders. I think we've got to sell again, like when I was in law school. A lot of people said, well, that's a pretty good road to go down, because you're going to get in court all the time. You're going to get this experience as a litigator, and you can then later be hired maybe by a law firm that does civil litigation and be rewarded financially a lot better. So there's a number of things that need to be done to increase that. But right now we face this crisis of public safety. If the court were to adopt these standards, what's going to happen is more and more cases are going to be dismissed, and they're felony cases such as auto theft. And you know, Lars, everything we went through getting the initiative 2113 adopted last session, the legislature on police pursuits to let them pursue criminals again. Yeah. A lot of that could be undone if the criminals realize, well, yeah, they can arrest me, but they won't prosecute me.
Okay, but Senator, the second piece I don't understand is they want their caseloads reduced, felony caseloads by 70%. So I don't know how many felony cases an attorney usually handles in a year, but make the math easy for a public school graduate like me. If you had an attorney and he or she used to handle 100 cases a year, he or she is saying, I can only handle 30 cases a year. Have felonies already, have they become so complicated that an attorney who used to handle 100 cases a year can only handle 30 cases a year?
Well, I don't think so. I think they have become a little more complicated, but not that much. I mean, there are, you know, things that are more complex now that they might have to deal with, social media, new types of evidence and stuff. But nothing to that extent. And
and on misdemeanors, they want it cut by 60%. So the lawyer who handled, right, 100 misdemeanors a year says, yeah, I can barely do 40. Well, hold on. So you want more money paid to you because you've got big law school bills that you took on. And now you're telling us you can't do half the work that a lawyer would have been expected to do a few years ago. And by the way, Senator, we've got judges now who see they don't hold in, almost nobody gets held in custody. Nobody has to post bail. And when they finally punish somebody, the punishments have gone down as well. Am I wrong about any of that?
No, I think it's a real crisis in the system, and there's a number of things. Of course, there are some good judges out there that do hold people accountable, but there's a lot in our state and superior courts that have been appointed by Governor Inslee that have a different philosophy than I think the public has. So, yeah, there's a lot of different problems, but the immediate one is these. And a number, actually a couple of respected King County, of all places, Superior Court judges, wrote an op-ed in the Seattle Times arguing against this and saying how dangerous it is if the Supreme Court were to adopt these standards. So I think there's some growing momentum against the court adopting the standards. It would be a disaster.
Yeah, I think it would be. And look, I want the cases to be tried. I want the people who are charged to be found guilty if they're guilty and not guilty if they're not guilty. But what I don't want to do is see a bunch of attorneys who say, well, I want to make more money. I want to make more money and do less work. And you need to pay me more, and I will do less work for you. That sounds like the taxpayers getting ripped off. That is Senator Mike Padden. He's the ranking member on Washington State Senate Law and Justice Committee. Senator, it's a pleasure to have you on from the Spokane Valley. Glad to be with you on a Thursday. Boy, have I got a conspiracy theory for you coming up. 5 assassination teams in America, 3 sponsored by foreign governments, 2 of them homegrown, and all of them apparently aiming for President Trump. The story just broke hours ago. That's next.
Ronald Reagan. They can know better. Do you?
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. Would you believe 5 assassination teams in the United States of America? Now, I know some of you are thinking, Lars, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but don't go over into the deep end. Well, I'm going to tell you something. This is a serious report. Florida GOP Rep. Matt Gaetz today has said that a senior official from Homeland Security has told him that prior to the second assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump, the agency knew of 5 different assassination teams that were targeting Donald Trump. Now, I've told some of you, or I've told all of you, that I'm counting the one that happened on Sunday, where a man was caught by the fence line near Trump International Golf Course with a SKS, not an AK-47, but a similar gun, SKS with a scope and backpacks and ceramic plates and ammunition and a GoPro camera. That was an assassination attempt. Although the fun folks at the New York Times say in what the Secret Service calls an assassination attempt, because apparently the eggheads at the New York Times have said, we're not sure this thing actually qualifies as an assassination attempt just because a guy had a semi-automatic rifle with a scope a couple of hundred yards away from Donald Trump, former president of the United States. We're not sure that qualifies as an assassination attempt, but I'll give you the details in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com. And if you care to, cast a vote in our X poll. Every day we put up a brand new question. Today, California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed 2 new laws in 2 days. They are aimed at banning deep fakes, the AI-created images or video or audio, because he wants to prohibit digital disinformation during elections. Apparently, they're responding to a deep fake parody of Vice President Kamala Harris that was posted by Elon Musk of X. Now, one of the bills says that large online platforms must block the posting of materially deceptive content related to elections in California. So I guess we can say goodbye to any kind of parody or any kind of jokes, because I've seen this was not an AI fake, but it was a picture of Kamala Harris yelling, "Are you going to vote? Are you going to vote?" And they posted the video clumsily. I mean, it was clearly a fake, next to pictures of people crossing illegally at America's southern border. And it was as though she was telling the illegal aliens, "We want to make sure you vote in November." Now, I understand that's a fake. Anybody with half a brain understands that's a fake. Gavin Newsom now says that you can pursue criminal charges against somebody for creating a deep fake that deceives somebody. Anybody dumb enough to be deceived by that probably shouldn't be voting anyway. But let me get back to this. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. Let me start with Pasco, who's calling in. Pasco, thanks for the call from Vancouver, B.C. What's on your mind?
Yeah, first I'll start off by saying I'd like to only work 30% of the time and get 100% of my salary, too.
You and me both.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'd like to talk about is the shocking information that came out of the Congress today about the Biden-Harris, the Biden-Harris administration silencing the border people by saying that, hey, don't tell anybody about the terrorists that we allowed into the country accidentally. And by the way, since we've closed the border now, at least, you know, or put through some sort of a system that reduces the number, they're just going to fly them over at the tune of 150,000 U.S. They give them a phone. They give them food stamps. You know, the people that need to really, like, they start talking about deep fakes down in California. Why don't we go after the news entities that are out there that don't do what you do, which is tell the truth?
Well, I appreciate that. Pasco, can I throw a couple of other data points in? You mentioned the border official. This is the former Border Patrol chief for San Diego, which is right on the front lines. And what he testified to the Congress today is he said, prior to Joe Biden, they were arresting 10 to 12 what are called SIAs every year. So about once a month, they'd run into a special interest alien. And what an SIA is a suspected terrorist or a bad guy of one kind or another. In other words, they stood out from the crowd even prior to Joe Biden. They stood out as somebody of exceptional interest. And they said they were arresting 10 to 12 a year. He said when the first year Biden was in, 100 SIAs in the first year. So the numbers went up tenfold. And then the next year they went up again, and the following year they went up again. And he said prior to Biden, he and his men were allowed to tell the press, well, we arrested an SIA today, or we got one last month. And they were forbidden by the Biden administration to tell that information to the public. That's problem one. Problem number two, he said they were getting so many illegal aliens who ordinarily would have been cut loose in San Diego. Well, I'd point out California is a big blue Democrat state. He testified that not only are they flying in illegals from other countries to the United States, that's the Biden administration, but what this guy testified to the Congress today is that Homeland Security began supplying two charter flights a week, big jet planes, at $150,000 each, as you said, except what they were doing, he said, all we were doing was taking the illegals we would have cut loose in San Diego, and they flew them to Texas, which is, by the way, a red state. So in other words, you know, the Biden administration said, we know all these people are coming in. If we cut them loose in San Diego and Southern California, this big blue state might just turn red by the time of the election. So what we'll do is we'll just move all the illegals to Texas, which was already getting more than its share of illegal aliens. So this guy is testifying this. He's now former. He's retired. But he's saying this is what was happening during Biden, and they told us we couldn't talk about it. Now, I think this should be a major league scandal, don't you?
100%. I mean, this is a complete violation of even what they, when they take their oath of office. They're not protecting the border, foreign and domestic. They're flying people in at the expense of the Americans. And then all they're going to do is say, oh, my goodness, crime is out of control. Guess what we need? More money. Just
absolutely right. Pasco, thanks a lot for the call. Let me tell you the rest of the details, and I'll fully credit our friend John Solomon, the investigative reporter at Just the News. So here's the report. An official from the Department of Homeland Security, this is what Matt Gaetz, member of Congress from Florida, said, in my office before the second assassination attempt, saying he had assessed that there are five known assassination teams in the United States, three inspired by foreign governments, two that are here that are known domestic assassination teams. And with that, Gaetz says this individual was coming to me concerned that the force protection around President Trump, even prior to that second assassination attempt, was not sufficient for what it needed to be at the coordination at that level, at the dignitary protection level, was bare minimum that we do to keep our presidents and presidential candidates safe. Five assassination teams that are known to be targeting Trump, and that raises questions about why certain teams were pulled off the Trump detail and put on, for example, the Jill Biden detail. Now, remember, this is prior to the second attempt. That means they were talking about what happened in July the 13th in Pennsylvania. Here's Donald Trump at one end of the state at the Butler County, Pennsylvania showgrounds, with thousands of people, and he has a smaller Secret Service detail than Jill Biden in Pittsburgh at the other end of the state, who's giving a talk to a Sons and Daughters of Italy dinner. Much smaller event. She had four times the Secret Service detail. And you've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Elon Musk sums up America's government.
And what I see all over the place is people who care about looking good while doing evil.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We call this Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Occasionally I have one. There is no truth whatsoever to the conspiracy theory that the pager message received by the members of Hezbollah yesterday was from the liver to the knee. But, you know, the fact is a dead terrorist in my book is a good terrorist. And I don't know if Rabbi Yaakov can actually go that far and agree with me on that. But he is the managing director of the Coalition for Jewish Values, the largest rabbinic public policy organization in America. Rabbi Mencken, welcome back to the program, and tell us what we should make of the fact that this was a very successful attack on a terrorist organization that threatens one of our allies.
So glad to be with you, as usual. And what we were seeing already around the world is condemnation of Israel for the most precise attack on enemy combatants in a urban situation that has literally ever been done. Nobody has managed on this scale to eliminate enemy combatants, harm enemy combatants, occasionally kill them, and not cause collateral damage. Literally, they have to go stretch and find one girl whose father let her, I mean, the father is a terrorist. The father is a genocidal terrorist out to kill as many Jews in Israel as possible. And he left his pager out, which was, of course, his Hezbollah terror-only pager, and let his daughter have access to it. And that's the one. Like, oh, you see, Israel's such bad people because they killed her. And, of course, Hezbollah is already calling it a genocide. You see, when you're eliminating enemy combatants who want to slaughter the Jews, we're going to call the Israelis genocidal to hide the real agenda going on here.
And by the way, a genocide that involves the deaths of 25 people, wounding of 608. I think the early numbers were that maybe as many as 3,000 had been wounded or hurt in some way, but only 25 dead. That's not a giant death toll if you want to talk about genocide, but genocide's become the popular rallying cry of a lot of people, both for Hamas and on American college campuses.
Oh, any civilized human being is cheering Israel right now. I mean, there's just no way to look at it in two ways. These guys are, you know, Hezbollah, the worst of the worst. They want to kill every Jew in the world. Their agenda is explicitly genocidal. They're just like Hamas. They're just like Adolf Hitler, for that matter. Kill all the Jews. That's the agenda. And Israel managed to find the enemy combatants and eliminate them. All of a sudden, Congresswoman AOC, who had nothing to say when Hezbollah rendered hundreds of thousands of homes uninhabitable by threatening civilians, had nothing to say when 12 Druze, those are Arabs, were killed by Hezbollah, 12 children murdered by Hezbollah. She had nothing to say. But Israel manages to disable, potentially, thousands of enemy combatants bent on genocide, kills one little 9-year-old girl who's, you know, she picked up dad's pager. It's very unfortunate, but certainly not their intent. And all of a sudden, she discovers her humanitarianism, her dedication to international law. When a person only discovers international law when it's time to malign the Jews, is probably a reason for that.
And by the way, as I understand it, Israel is thought to have, although they didn't originally claim credit for it, but then the Biden White House basically outed the country and said, yeah, they're the ones who did it. But I thought they were waiting and they were going to use this ability to attack Hezbollah until a wider conflict or some direct attack was being launched by Hezbollah and steal, not only incapacitate a lot of the bad guys, but also deny them the communication system they had. And they were effectively forced by circumstances to launch it early. Do you understand it the same way?
I don't really have any special insight knowledge on something like that. I'm not, a foreign policy or defense specialist or anything like that. I can only look at the moral situation and the picture here and what it tells you when people are leaping to condemn Israel for doing it. Whatever their calculation was, you know, they made the timing. They decided this is when we had to do it. Biden may have outed Israel over it. It was clear only the Israelis had the ability to pull something like this off and the need to pull something like this off. But, you know, you're dealing with a genocidal enemy. They had fired thousands of rockets into Israel. And people who never said boo are all of a sudden all agitated over the fact that Israel actually disabled the terrorists firing all those missiles. That really tells you something about those people. And it is not just in America, of course. It's all over. It's actually much more popular in Europe to be thinking this way. It's legitimately grotesque, and we should all be looking at this situation going, you know, it's very clear. This is not just about Israel. This is a battle for the future of civilization right here, because the people who are actually condemning Israel really want to see the civilized world torn down.
Yeah, and the fact is that a lot of people, I don't see this mentioned very often, but tell me if I'm off on the numbers. My understanding is there are about 60,000 people in the state of Israel who've been displaced by the fact that they're now, you know, in the line of fire, and they've been told you can't go back to their homes, and they've been displaced for some time, have they not, at the northern end of the country?
It's actually, yeah, it's even higher, and it's basically since October of last year when Hezbollah started firing rockets. And this doesn't bother these leftists, the folks who are condemning Israel. They're not bothered when when Hamas fires rockets. They're not bothered when Hezbollah fires rockets. They're not bothered by the kidnappings, the rapes, the murders, the beheadings. They're only upset when Israel takes action to defend lives. That's their problem. What does that tell you about their attitude towards civilization in general? They're the same folks burning American flags. It's pretty clear.
By the way, Rabbi, what does it say about this country, or at least certain districts of this country, if the voters go to the polls, especially with the reps, not the senators, but with the reps who run every 2 years, and say, we heard what AOC said, we've heard what Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar have said, but we're going to go ahead and send them back to Congress. What does it say about us?
You know, the Nazis took over the Reichstag. They became the largest party in Germany's government through democratic means, through being elected. Because people say, oh, that's not a big problem. Oh, there's bigger issues for us. If you think there's a bigger issue than the future of civilization, look what it did to Germany. Look what has happened to all the various cultures that maligned and then persecuted and then got rid of their Jews. They've all been torn down. There is no Holy Roman Empire anymore. There is no Babylonian kingdom, Greek kingdom, Roman kingdom. And guess what? There's no Germany. There's no Germany kingdom anymore. There's no Spanish kingdom anymore. There's a reason for that. America could go the same way if we allow this to proliferate.
Well, and we could also go the same way if we allow the folks who shout, you know, death to America, death to Israel every week, the folks in Iran who seem to be now involved in our election. And I don't see that one. All the people who complained about foreign election interference, and yesterday it comes out that Iran hacked into Trump's campaign and then tried to give the information to the Biden campaign. And there's a good reason why Iran is grateful to Joe Biden and angry or fearful of Donald Trump. It's because Joe Biden enriched them to the tune of tens of billions of dollars of oil revenues and unfrozen assets. And Donald Trump, when he comes back in, is going to go back to dealing with Iran tough. And he's going to cut off their money supply, and he's going to deal with them in a tough way. And they don't want him as president, so they're actually interfering with the election. And I don't hear the president or the vice president coming out to condemn that. That's Rabbi Yaakov Menken from the Coalition for Jewish Values. Back in a moment. We'll get to your calls. 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Naysayers go to the head of the line. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Well,
truth be told, Lars has welcomed naysayers for 27 years, but occasionally...
Who is this person who speaks to me as though I needed his advice?
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. A little update in the Portland Metro, actually out toward the east, toward Gresham. Reynolds School District campuses went into a secure mode. Never heard of that one before. I've heard of lockdown. As authorities searched for and later arrested a person who had pointed a gun at somebody outside of one of the middle schools, Reynolds Middle School. A person had reported that another person pointed a gun at them on the sidewalk in front of Reynolds Middle School. The person fled. Sheriff's deputies and Gresham police began searching the area. Person was taken into custody. We don't know the disposition of that, and the police have not shared the identity of the person. As we get more information, I'll be glad to share it with you. Glad to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk. Our ex-poll question today, is California right to ban free speech in the form of artificial intelligence deepfakes? Governor Gavin Newsom signing two new laws on that in 2 days this week. I would say no, they're not right to ban free speech. And I think the laws are going to be taken to court and defeated on constitutional grounds. But you can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Kurt Van Meter joins me, great friend of the show, great musician who went from being a cop to a music star. And Kurt, congratulations on all your success.
Thank you, Lars. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I understand you're doing a live event at the PNC studio tomorrow.
I am, yeah. 6 o'clock. You guys can call in and get on the email list and come out. And we're going to be playing all the songs from my new album called Echoes of the Outlaw. So I'm pretty excited about it. I've always wanted to play that venue.
No, would you mind describing for my audience how you made that transition? Because you went from being basically an 8-hour-a-day cop to being a very award-winning country musician. How do you make that happen?
Well, in 2009, I was working for the Hillsborough Police Department, and I got into a really bad shooting. By the grace of God, that I'm still alive. And then during the month that I had off, I started playing music, playing guitar, just as a form of therapy. And so once that was done, and when you almost die, you kind of lose a lot of fear and a lot of things. And so I just started going to playing music. And then within about 8 months, I got to open for Chris Young and then a guy named Josh Thompson. And then the next year, I got to open for Montgomery Gentry, David Allen Coe. So the Lord just blessed it. And so in 2013, I started doing music full time. And the summer of 2014, I got to play with Blake Shelton and Eric Church and Montgomery Gentry again. And that's when things really started transitioning toward success in the music world. It's been a blessing.
And now you got albums out and songs out. And I would have to guess, I don't know much about it because my dad could play guitar. I couldn't. But it sounds like these days, if you get a good song, you've got a way to expose it literally to the whole world because social media and the Internet have made that possible. Is that working for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can see what countries are playing your music. So right now it's the United States, of course, Canada, and then Australia is number 3 for me. And then Chicago is the number 1 city playing my music, which I have no idea why.
Now, that one doesn't even make sense, does it, for the musical genre you play in, for Chicago to be your biggest audience? How does that work?
Zero sense. The only thing I can think of is we did a PBS special out there last year, and they might have aired it, and it caused a spike and stuff. So, it makes no sense. And there's countries like in Papua New Guinea playing my music. I'm like, what in the world? It's crazy. So it's been a blessing. And then, to have Cowboy Grip be licensed by the Professional Bull Riders Association, that's automatic worldwide exposure because, they're big in South America and Brazil and all that.
Now, hold on. Is that the song? I mean, because they're typical. When I've gone to rodeos, there are some songs they play all the time during the bull riding. Is that now Cowboy Grit is the song that gets played when somebody goes out on the back of one of those things?
No, I don't think so. I did just give them permission to play it during the rodeo. So I haven't been to one of those rodeos yet. But, I've got another song that they typically play that I can't talk about on this station, but it's a little more hard rock. And it's good. But the Cowboy Grit one's been great because it's a part of the PBR's international ad campaign. And so, I got to see that down in Dallas, Texas at AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys played. And they did it was on the big screen, and I was sitting in the second level, and there's a couple beside me, and there's tens of thousands of people there, and my song came on, and I said, this is my song. I looked over, because I was there alone, and I looked over at them, and I said, this is my song, and they looked at me like, oh, that's cute. This middle-aged man's got a song. I'm like, no, that's me singing. That's my song, and they're like, okay. They didn't believe me. So I just enjoyed my soda and enjoyed my song being listened to by tens of thousands of people.
Kurt, before we run out of time, you're live at the PNC studio tomorrow at 6 p.m. What other big things are on the agenda right now or on your schedule coming up that are exciting?
Tonight we're at ALMA in Ridgefield, Washington at 7 p.m. Monday night in Southern Oregon in Medford, we're at Walkabout Brewing with Alex Miller from American Idol. And then October 17th, we'll be out in Manhattan, New York again doing a concert with Tunnels to Towers.
Wow, that's great. So you're going to play for the cause.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very excited about Tunnels to Towers. It's an amazing organization. So, and New York is awesome. They love country music, which I got to go out in September and play week out there, solo acoustic shows, and I was a little nervous going to New York because, you know, I didn't think you liked country music, and I tell you, they loved it, and they were singing it loud. It was crazy.
Well, tell people where to find your website or your Facebook.
KurtVanMeter.com, so K-U-R-T. My mom had a crush on Kurt Russell when I was born. Thank God. It could have been worse. And, Van Meter. KurtVanMeter.com is where you can go get everything. And Facebook is Kurt Van Meter. Instagram is DKurtVanMeter.
The Lars Larson.
Ladies and gentlemen, you ready for the big show?
Right.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
You know, we have to stay woke. Like, everybody needs to be woke.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I guess you could say I have a dog in the fight on this particular subject that I'm going to talk about. I pay an energy bill. I pay for electricity. I pay for natural gas. I pay for gasoline. I pay for diesel. So I care what energy costs in the Pacific Northwest. Well, the problem is for years, I've been suggesting to people, if we follow these idiots down the road who say, let's get rid of coal, let's get rid of conventional, let's not build nuclear, we're going to power the entire country or just the Pacific Northwest on windmills and solar panels and electric battery cars. We are not going to get there, number one. The materials don't exist on planet Earth, or at least in a mineable form, to be able to fulfill the dreams, the green dreams of people like Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the other greenies. So, and in the short run, it's going to cost a lot more, except by the time you see the cost in the bill coming to your house, it's going to be too late to change course. These are decisions made over the course of decades. Well, glad to tell you that there is a brand new research report that looks at what are the alternatives. I mean, if you were looking for an apartment, you wouldn't look for just one. If you're going to buy a house, you wouldn't look at just one. If you were looking for a car, you wouldn't just look at one. You'd say, well, what are my possible choices? And Jonathan Lesser knows all about how these have been lined out. He is a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute in Seattle. Jonathan, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me on, Lars.
And by the way, the link, tell people, first of all, where they can find this report so they don't just have to believe what you and I have to say about what's inside of it.
Sure. The website is called reasonable.energy, and they can that's through the Discovery Institute, and they can see download a copy of the report. My other report from a year ago on all pain and no gain, it's called. Which this new one is another example of, as well as various opinion and op-eds in different newspapers. So again, it's reasonable.energy.
And just in the last, I think, 18 months or so, we've seen a bunch of people get very excited because all of the major utilities in the Northwest have been jacking up their rates. And of course, you get the usual reaction from I think from those on the left who say, well, we're just going to have the government tell those utilities they're not allowed to raise the price. Well, the problem is that that doesn't work, because if the utility companies, whether it's private or public PUDs or investor owned utilities, they've got to take their costs, and then they've got to get a little bit of profit, and then they pass on the bill to all of us. So would you mind outlining for my audience what you found when you said, what happens if we go renewables only, so wind and solar, and hydro's already baked in the cake, but wind and solar would be the new ones, since nobody's going to build any new dams, and they might even tear out a few of the old ones, lower cost renewables, and then natural gas and nuclear. How do the various options line up when it comes to price?
Well, what we looked at was we looked at the states, both states, requirements that basically their entire economies be electrified by 2050. So both states are going to require that all new cars sold after 2035 have to be electric. Both states want to convert all natural gas, space heat, and water heat to electric. They want to even probably ban gas stoves. So essentially what we said is, okay, you're going to, you want an all-electric economy, what's it going to cost? You're going to have to build a lot more generation, a lot more transmission. And we found that if you use just renewables only, if you phase out all the existing fossil fuel generation in both states and rely on wind, solar, and battery storage, the additional cost to Washington and Oregon ratepayers by 2050 will be $550 billion. And I should point out, that's before taking into account inflation.
So half a trillion dollars and then some plus whatever inflation does.
That's right. And we looked at, well, let's suppose there's a lower cost renewable situation, because a lot of environmentalists talk about, oh, renewables are becoming too cheap to meter. they're all going down.
Haven't we heard that before when they first came up with nuclear?
We have indeed. And so we said, all right, let's assume that the costs of renewables drop in half by 2050. Between now and then, they get, you know, they're half the price. Well, that would only cost ratepayers another $418 billion, which is still an insane amount of money. We also then modeled a natural gas and nuclear scenario. So essentially we said, well, if you're going to pursue this all-electrification drive, which personally I think is a little nutty, but that's another story, it would only cost $86 billion. Because you wouldn't need all the storage. You could avoid all of it by keeping some of the natural gas and some of the, and building new nuclear plants.
And by the way, when you talk about storage, Jonathan, we're talking about batteries, which would have to be massive batteries of some kind, lithium ion probably with today's technology, or pump storage of some kind where the geography and water and everything else makes pump storage possible. But other than that, those are the two big ways to save power, to store power, aren't they?
They are, and we looked at some pump storage, but again, that's pretty limited in both states.
Yep.
You know, there are some sites, they're all controversial. And so most of it's going to have to be battery storage. And again, a lot of people say, well, there's these new battery technologies coming online that'll drop the cost to nothing, you know, because they work on the lab bench. But converting something from a lab bench to commercial operation is a stretch, and that takes a lot of time.
And by the way, just so people understand what this will do, you are assuming a modest inflation rate of 2% a year. We're running about 50% above that right now. I hope we get back down to 2, but we're about 50% above it right now. But assuming that, somebody's bill would go from today, $110 a month, to about $700 a month by 2050.
That's correct. And imagine that's for residential customers. The impact on the states, two states' economies will be devastating. You'll have soaring rates of energy poverty because at $700 a month for your electric bill, that's going to hurt a whole lot. You're going to drive businesses and jobs out of the two states. There'll be, you know, companies will be looking for lower cost environments. They may go to other states. Who knows? They may go overseas. And so we also looked at, well, what's the point of all this supposedly is to address climate change. So we wanted to evaluate, well, what will it do for the climate? Because that's the whole purpose. Using the Environmental Protection Agency's own model, called MAGIC, we looked at what if you zeroed out emissions by 2040. So in other words, by 2040, no emissions, no greenhouse gas emissions from both states from energy. And we found that by the year 2100, that would translate into a temperature reduction of 0.03°C.
Unbelievable. That is Jonathan Lesser. You can find the link for the report. And if you don't have it, send me an email. I'll make sure you get taken care of. But imagine this, $549 billion for renewables to provide the energy for the Pacific Northwest, $85 billion, or about one-fifth the cost if you go natural gas and nuclear to make all that juice. You got the Lars Larson Show. When you
Americans, the listeners, say it best.
Hey, Lars, love your show, and I really appreciate what you do. Boy, you cover more territory in an afternoon than a lonely badger in springtime.
Who's next? This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and emails. This segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. Our X poll today, California Governor Gavin Newsom has now signed two brand new laws that I think are going to be beaten in court as unconstitutional. But in the meantime, what they do is they ban what are known as deep fakes, that is, faked video or still pictures or audio created using artificial intelligence, because they prohibit disinformation during elections. I think if this was actually put in place, it would probably eliminate almost every parody that you have ever seen on social media. The legislation is actually a response to a parody of Vice President Kamala Harris shared by Elon Musk. One of the bills requires large online platforms to block the posting of deceptive content related to elections in California during specified periods before and after the election. The second bill targets deepfakes portraying candidates in misleading ways that could harm their reputation or electoral prospects, with exceptions for satire, parody, and news reporting, except that you then have to put a disclaimer on it and identify it that way. Is California right to ban that kind of free speech? I say no. You can vote any way you like. You'll find the question online at Lars Larson Show on X, on our website at LarsLarson.com, and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let me go first to Brooks. Hey, Brooks, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I'm calling for Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Sure, go for it.
Awesome. So I've heard stories of the CIA controlling or inspiring musical artists to write songs that, like, advance their agenda. Like, in the time of communism, they supposedly, this is a conspiracy theory, convinced somebody to write Winds of Change. But my theory, since the CIA is obviously infiltrated by communists, is that John Lennon was, and this is not that I should believe this, I just think it's fun to think about. John Lennon was the president of the Illuminati, and the UN and all the other communists inspired the song Imagine and made it so popular to advance their agenda to take over the world. What do you think?
I think that's a good conspiracy theory. I don't know if it's true or not, but to support your theory, let's try this. There is something real called Operation Paperclip. And Operation Paperclip, as I understand it, was essentially saying, we're going to go out and we're going to hire people in journalism. I mean, mostly writers for newspapers and TV and all that, and we'll put them on the payroll and they'll push our messages out for us. I don't think our government should be involved in any of that, at least in our country. When it comes to other countries, I think that's a tougher case to argue against, because things like Voice of America and things like that, I thought were actually a positive thing to do. Although, you know, they've certainly been controversial over the years, but the idea that the government would push messages on its own population, it is so subject to abuse and use by people like the folks who are in charge right now. And if you say, well, but the folks in our government would never lie to us. Yes, they would. They would lie to you all day long and twice on Sunday. And I would point out two things in support of that. One is that we now know it, the story broke yesterday, from our own government saying Iran hacked into Donald Trump's presidential campaign and then offered the information to the Biden campaign. Now, there's no indication that Biden's campaign took it. That's not the point. The point is that our own government has said Iran is trying to mess with our election. Now, every other time there's been a suggestion that a foreign government was trying to mess with our elections, you hear Biden, you hear Harris, you hear the whole bunch of them out there screaming bloody murder. How dare they mess with our elections? Of course, most of their screaming was about the Russia, 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 which turned out to be a hoax inspired by people in our own government. But, you know, why aren't they just as concerned that Iran might be trying to turn or twist the direction of a presidential campaign so Trump loses and Kamala Harris wins? Because Iran would benefit tremendously. They have benefited already under Biden. They would benefit more under Kamala Harris. They would be hurt badly, And I have no problem with hurting the biggest sponsor of terrorism on planet Earth. They'd be hurt by Donald Trump's return. So why wouldn't they try to twist it? But you don't hear them talking about that, do you?
Never.
So that's that. But your theory is an interesting one, that they would use music. One last question. How do you explain George Harrison, who, at least based on some of the songs he wrote, was a real conservative?
You know, I don't know anything about him. But I'm just convinced that John Lennon was the president of the Illuminati. I'm just going to go with that one.
Okay, go with that one, and we'll see where it goes. Let's go to Dana. Hey, Dana, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Yeah, hey, I really appreciate it. Long-time listener, first time that I was able to get through. I wanted to give you guys some information on what's happening down here in the Coca River system. We recently had a release of nearly 40,000 Chinook smolt in the river system.
Smolt or baby fish, for everybody who doesn't know.
Yeah, baby fish. The smolt, they're actually 4 to 5 inches long. And the ODFW decided to put them in basically a swamp in Beaver Creek that had not nearly enough O2 levels. The temperatures were super high. And from what I've seen and what I've gathered, and I went down there twice, they all died. They probably died within 12 hours of being placed into that pond or that swamp. We have reports from people contacted ODFW telling them that the fish were actually, you know, gasping for air and beaching themselves, and they were told by the Charleston district that they were just chasing bugs. I've gone down there twice now, and in the last 24 hours.
Let me ask you one detail I want to ask you, Dana.
Sure.
Is it, now, were they dumped into the swamp, or did they make their way into the swamp? Because if ODFW comes back and says, look, we dumped them where they were supposed to go, but they went to the wrong, you know, they went into the swamp instead of down a creek or a stream, or were they actually dumped into the swamp by ODFW?
They were dumped directly into the swamp. There's an area on North Bank Road in Coquille, and you know, let your listeners know, they go down there, you go across the one bridge, and then the second bridge just before it, you take a right. It's like a nature area.
Yeah.
But they took all the fish, all 37,600 fish, and dumped them inside that slough, and there's no moving water there, Lars, at all.
I doesn't surprise. That's the definition of a slough, isn't it? Is a slow or unmoving body of water, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we spent time down in Louisiana, the swamps and stuff like that. I mean, our Chinook would have a better chance in the bayous of Louisiana than they would, you know, here. I've talked to biologists, and they've told me that this is the absolutely wrong place to put it.
Dana, was this incompetence, or is there a sign that it was deliberate? Because I'm curious. I mean, did some knucklehead who doesn't know his job do it?
I think both, but more than anything, I think it's malicious. You know, there's a new program here. The Coca River Step Association has kind of reinvigorated itself over the last couple of years, and they're working with the Coquille Indian tribe, and they have now, they have an MOU with the Bannon Hatchery of a no waste policy, which means that all the Chinook that come up, you know, they could propagate them.
The Lars Larson Show. New plan of action. Just mug all the Debs.
I got jumped like 5 weeks ago walking home in New York City. And when I woke up, I genuinely felt like a different person. Because I was on the floor, I was bleeding, I was concussed, and I was 100% Republican.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I thought we'd talk to our friend Wesley Smith, who writes for the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. Oftentimes we talk to him about crazy things like doctor-assisted suicide and other things that raise ethical issues. In this case, I want to talk to him about science itself, because Wesley has suggested that science is eroding its own credibility by jumping into the world or the area, the lane of political endorsements. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, good to talk to you again.
Science has a lot of explaining to do lately, because not only have we begun to question a lot of the conclusions that they draw and whether or not they've got an agenda, whether it's financial or otherwise, but now you point out that some of the biggest journals in the world, Scientific American, has now begun to do politics as well. Explain first what it is that they're doing before we go into why this is so wrong.
Well, Scientific American just endorsed Kamala Harris for president and did so in a profoundly dishonest way, which is really wrong in any event, but for a science journal, it's really incredible. For example, this is not totally dishonest, but it's totally misleading. They said for the second time in 175 years, they're endorsing for president. Well, the first time was in 2020. when they endorsed for Biden. So this has become a habit with them. Secondly, one of the reasons they believe that President Trump is not qualified is because they say, told people to inject bleach during COVID. Well, of course, President Trump did no such thing. And in fact, I wrote a piece for National Review in which I take the full quote of Trump's and show that he never got even close to suggesting that people inject bleach. He didn't suggest that they inject anything. This is a totally made up lie by the media and by Democratic Party operatives. And the Scientific American, supposedly, again, a science journal and publication, issued this baloney as if it were true.
Well, and in fact, this isn't anything new in politics, is it? Because you've had the fine people quote, where if you read the entire quote, you understand it means exactly the opposite of what the mainstream media has said. And yet Kamala Harris herself is running around saying, well, you know, President Trump said that neo-Nazis and others were fine people. Well, it's not true. It's categorically untrue. He actually made it a point when he made the comment to say, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and those people. And then they just said, well, we can flip it out of context and most Americans won't bother to check and the mainstream media won't call us out for it. So they don't get called out when they lie.
It's one thing when partisans do it, but it's another thing when a science journal does it. Nature, which is supposedly the most respected science journal in the world, has also endorsed Harris. And when you take what should be objective, professional publications that publish learned articles to kind of further the scientific understanding of the world, and you become ideological instead, then you are undermining the very sector. You're harming the very sector you claim to represent. The New England Journal of Medicine, here's another example. The New England Journal of Medicine is supposedly the most respected medical journal in the world, but they've gone totally woke on gender-affirming care, quote-unquote. In fact, there was an article about a year ago in which they had somebody from WPATH, which is really not a medical association, it's an ideological
Well, by the
transgender...
way, tell them what WPATH is, this group of doctors and other professionals who push this garbage, right?
Yeah, it's an association that basically pushes the gender ideology in the society and pretends that it's a settled healthcare. Gender ideology says that you're not born in two sexes, and that gender is completely malleable, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's one thing for an ideological organization to say it, but when a medical journal swallows that nonsense completely, and second, publishes articles in which the claim is made that there is no dispute in the medical community about this, when in fact England, Norway, Finland, France, Sweden and other countries have actually gone in the other direction precisely because the scientific data does not support this gender-affirming care nonsense for children. And the New England Journal of Medicine published a piece as if that dispute didn't exist. Science has to have, you have to talk about, you know, you might disagree with the perspective of the UK. And these are not Bible Belt countries, by the way, I would point out. But you can't pretend that this dispute doesn't exist. Science has to engage these issues and try to thrash it out, not pretend that there's a one-size-fits-all and that this is settled science, because it isn't.
Well, not to put words in your mouth, but Wesley, I think about what happened. What happens when they stake out a position like that? And then you have, for example, European countries that say, we're going to literally ban giving hormone drugs to kids for these gender issues because it's a bad idea and it damages the kids. And they have done that recently. But you've already staked out this position that's counter to that. Then that means that where science is supposed to consider all the information, even new information as it comes in and says, hey, that stuff we thought was true, no longer true, or maybe, you know, there are qualifiers to whether or not it's true in some cases, but not in others. But if you already staked out that position, doesn't that self-limit science? Because they've already said, well, we've already declared that all this stuff is true. We can't consider new information that runs counter to it, which is the opposite of science, isn't it?
Well, yes, that is the opposite of science. And what science is supposed to do in that circumstance is say, oh, new information has come along. The issue that we thought was pretty well resolved, it looks like it isn't. Now we have to publish this heterodox information, and we have to grapple with that. That's how science works. When you decide you're not going to do that, not only do you call the science, that you published into great question, but people begin to believe, and I believe, that if somebody came along with a very citable and peer-reviewable counter-argument, it wouldn't be published because it goes against the narrative. So the science establishment, the major journals, Nature, Science, and Scientific American, and so forth, the medical establishment, New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Lancet, things like that, the bioethics community, all of these journals have gone hard left-wing ideologically, and that means that what they publish, A, you have to call into question whether it can be trusted, and B, you have to understand that if something came along that wasn't along the narrative that the editors want, the chances are it won't get published. And in fact, Lars, there was a fellow who published a piece in, I believe it was Nature last year, about forest fires in California and how climate change had impacted the forest fires. He wrote a piece for the Free Press, which is Barry Weiss's a wonderful publication.
It is great.
Saying that he did not include nuances in that study that he published in Nature because he knew if he did, Nature wouldn't publish the study.
Unbelievable. So now, self-censorship is what ends up happening. That is Wesley Smith. You got to read the whole piece. Is Scientific American eroding its own credibility by adding political endorsements? They are way out of their lane. Wesley, thank you very much. Back in a moment. I'll be glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Has a face for radio?
He's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails too at 866-HEY-LARS. And I've got to tell you, the biggest breaking story in my book in the last 24 hours was the news that Iran has hacked into America's election, that it hacked into the Trump campaign, that it managed to get its hands on, or cyber hands on, a bunch of data from the Trump campaign, and then it offered it up to the Biden campaign in a blatant, plain vanilla attempt to affect the outcome of the American election. And I think that is a gigantic story. That one of the countries that has been sponsoring terrorism all over the world and in the Middle East in particular, funded by Joe Biden's decision not to continue to enforce sanctions against Iran, and Iran got billions, tens of billions of dollars, because the estimate is that the relief from sanctions that was offered up to Iran, because during Trump, they couldn't sell much oil at all. As soon as Biden came in, he said, well, I'm going to leave the sanctions in place, but I'm just not going to enforce them. It would be like a town having a 30-mile-an-hour speed limit, but then telling the police, don't enforce the speed limit at all. We'll still leave the signs up. It's officially there, but we won't be enforcing that. Once people figure out they're not writing speeding tickets, then everybody's going 50 and a 30. Now, in the case of Biden, Iran wants Joe Biden to stay in office. Iran wants Kamala Harris to replace him. So what do they try to do? Mess with our elections. And apparently they did so successfully enough to hack information out of the Trump campaign and then take the information and offer it up to Joe Biden and company. Now, at this point, the intelligence agencies say there's no sign that the Biden campaign, or now the Kamala Harris campaign, has accepted any of that information. But we don't know that for sure now, do we? Because who's reporting it to us? Well, that would be the FBI and the CIA, which are executive branch agencies under the control of the Biden crime family. The second biggest story that has broken, though, in the last 24 hours, and this was just a few hours ago, that a senior official from the Department of Homeland Security has told at least one member of Congress that before the second attempt on Donald Trump's life last Sunday, that there were five assassination teams identified by Homeland Security that are on the ground in the United States. Three of those assassination teams, according to what Gates says, this is Matt Gates from Florida, he says an official from Homeland Security was in my office before the second assassination attempt, saying that he had assessed that there are five known assassination teams in the United States, three of them inspired by other foreign governments, two of them that are domestic assassination teams. And all of this is going on, and they have cut Donald Trump's security back to nothing. Just consider how big a story that is. And then ask yourself whether or not you hear about it on the radio, on television, on your newspaper, out of your newspaper, or on the news tonight. And then tell me what you think. Let's go to Mike. Hey, Mike in Estacada, thanks for joining us. What's on your mind?
Lars, I was hearing you talk about the solar cells, and I used to work in an industry where I saw a lot of this, and the solar cells only generate a DC voltage, which is used to charge a battery system, usually 12 volts. And from there, you have to turn the 12 volts into 120 volts, something usable.
That's pretty
basic. And they use a power inverter to do that. And really, the most expensive part of any of those systems is the power inverter.
Is the inverter itself? Okay. Well, except, does anybody care how much one piece of the system costs? If the whole system is still not economical to build, then what difference does it make whether it's one piece or another, unless there's some sign that those pieces, that one of those pieces is going to get considerably cheaper?
No, I don't think anybody cares about that. The only time Well, the only time I saw it used was in mountaintop systems where they didn't have any kind of power unless they generated it themselves. And the reason I brought it up is because I think people think when they buy solar cells that they're going to get something they can use, and that's really not true.
Well, it is usable. I mean, at some level, if somebody has, say, a camper or an RV and they want to put a DC solar panel on the roof and then run it in to keep the battery topped up, DC is perfectly good for that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay. And that was my point, that all these solar cells really do is generate a DC voltage. That's it. Yeah,
but DC can be converted to AC and then used any way you want to use it, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so I guess I'm at a loss to understand what was the point you were trying to make.
The point I'm trying to make is when people think they put solar cells on their rig or on their house or whatever the case is, that it's going to be something they can use without a lot of further costs. That's my point.
Okay, because most of the systems that I've seen proposed already have the assumption that you're going to run it through some kind of conversion to AC power? Or if you're feeding it back into the grid, does the DC power go into our current grid, or does it have to be converted to AC before it goes back into the grid?
From what I understand, it has to be turned into AC before you can turn it back into the grid.
So that's part of the cost of doing that. Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Glad to get your emails. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.